my friend Dr. Suvan Shankar is joining us this morning. He's a surgical oncologist, and good to see you again, pal. You've been doing all right?
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
I'd like to think that you're not busy.
Oh, it's been pretty busy.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it has, and even just my friends have been keeping you busy. So, you know, and I hate to see it, but I'm glad you're there to help them.
It's been very busy this early 2017, so it's just taking care of people in Southern Illinois like we're meant to.
I always kind of think of you, and I told you this last time you were in the studio, or time before maybe, always think about you as the enemy's inside the wire and you need a ninja.
Yes,
you're the surgical ninja.
That.
You remember that? I know you were uncomfortable with that terminology, but I still retain it. And this new procedure you're introducing to Southern Illinois probably increases that image in my mind. I'm not sure the exact term for this, but basically it's the direct application of chemotherapy drugs in the stomach in the area here. What's the procedure called?
So the procedure is called a HIPEC, which is H-I-P-E-C, which is stands for heated intraperitoneal chemotherapy, which in layman's terms is heated chemotherapy that you're applying to the abdominal cavity. And this is for patients that have had that have stage 4 cancer that's spread but is localized to the abdominal cavity. Traditionally, these patients are basically get IV chemotherapy and don't get that much benefit, and their survival rates are not very high.
Well, we have to iterate that this is stage 4 cancer.
It is stage 4 cancer, and this is not a procedure for everybody. It is very specialized, and there's a pretty significant amount of selection bias.
Is that your way of saying, no, Tom, you can't have this as a prophylactic, you know, for your bad habits? You can't go, can I get a little head dose in case something happens?
Right, right. Well, the thing is, it has specific indications. In terms of approvals from insurance companies, it's very important that people understand that. The appendix cancer, which is rare, mesothelioma of the abdominal cavity, primary peritoneal cancer is another thing. And nowadays it's also being done for colon cancer that's spread to the abdominal cavity. There are a lot of other countries across the world that are utilizing this procedure for multiple other indications. These
not
are the current indications,
yet, huh?
But not in the United States.
I wondered for a couple of moments. Well, we'll get to that in a couple of moments. I'm kind of curious about the procedure itself.
Yes.
We all have this mind, visual image of laying on a hospital gurney. We don't want it, but we have it in our, you know, mental vocabulary. So, I mean, you don't slice somebody open here. It's an injection.
So the major part of the procedure is not just the heated chemotherapy part. It is the actual cytoreductive surgery, which basically means you go into the abdominal cavity surgically and you take out all the cancer that's visible to the naked eye, the surgeon's eye. And after that, you place catheters in the patient's abdomen and temporarily close their belly. And you do the 90 minutes of heated chemotherapy where basically you're moving the patient's body back and forth.
Using
up and
gravity
down,
to apply?
Yes, up and down, different directions, not to mention you actually have somebody at the bedside that's moving the patient's abdomen back and forth. So the chemotherapy agent and the heated dialysis fluid is what is basically being utilized, which helps the microscopic cancer cells be killed. Heat directly kills cancer cells. And the chemotherapy kills cancer cells, but in combination, the heat helps the chemotherapy drugs actually penetrate the superficial lining of the bowel of whatever the chemotherapy comes into contact with.
So heated to body temperature?
Well, it is actually heated to 42 degrees centigrade. So that is way higher than normal
body
temperature.
So you get the effect of the chemo and the heat?
Correct, you do. And but
you have to keep the patient cold to their extremities while you're doing this to counteract that heat inside their body and the ability to dissipate that?
Very important, because the rest of your organs are getting too much heat, so you have to keep the rest of their body cool with cool fluids, with ice packs around their neck and groin,
right,
and all the other
groin,
areas
neck.
That you can basically access. And it's important to keep their kidneys flooded with a lot of fluid, so you can injure all the other organs that are normal. So hence, I say these procedures need to be done by a specialized team in specialized centers that know how to do it and to do it the right way for the right indication for the right patient.
You know, when I start looking at this, you're using physics. The Da Vinci thing, there was a reason why I talked about this before, because the fluid goes down. Well, here's what you do. It's not, we want an equal distribution.
Correct.
So stand you a little bit on your head, a little bit more on your feet, a little bit to the XY axis, you know, rotate, rinse and start over again for 90 minutes.
90 minutes.
Is that based on tolerance or effectiveness?
Well, I think it's basically Dr. Sugarbaker is the father of HIPEC, and he's been doing this for over 20, 30 years. And he's the one that introduced this procedure for appendix cancer to begin with a long time ago. And he's still a very active surgeon in Washington, D.C. And it's because of him that the HIPEC procedure has evolved and become so widely accepted across the world. And it is he that decided that it was going to be 90 minutes of exposure of, and every type of cancer has a different type of chemotherapy agent that you would use
based on the effectiveness
right. it's not an exact science as yet. There's a lot of research being done about the type of the chemotherapy agent, the timing. As you mentioned, 90 minutes, there are places that do 60 minutes, but traditionally it's been 90 minutes.
There's a lot to be learned here because we are so early in the learning. Now, you said 20, so we've got some baseline data to develop back, but the practice has been refined since then as well.
Correct.
What's your personal experience with outcomes? Now, once again, we need to frame this response with the fact that we're talking about stage 4 cancer.
Correct.
Is there a stage 5?
No.
I think we should mention that stage 4 is the last stage.
Correct. The stage 4 is the last stage. With respect to responses, now, this answer could be is I would base it off of the type of the cancer that you're dealing with. So patients that have appendix cancer have the best chance, stage 4 appendix cancer, have the best chance from this procedure because that's why this procedure was developed for. And honestly, patients can go on to live a normal life and have really good 5-year survival rates with appendix cancer, with mesothelioma too. The thing with
Let's talk about this. 5 years with stage 4.
Correct.
That's non-typical.
Correct. That's why people need to understand that appendix cancer is not like colon cancer. While colon cancer stage 4, traditionally, if it's peritoneal carcinomatosis, which is cancer that's spread to the abdominal cavity, your 5-year survival rates are dismal. At the most, with and without chemotherapy, your rates are, you know, anywhere from 6 to 12 months at the most.
Yeah.
With traditional treatment.
And try stage 4 pancreatic.
Well, stage 4 pancreatic I don't think there is something that we can do for stage 4 pancreatic at this point in time.
I can tell you that you can't unless you do the Whipple.
And well, even then, not for stage 4.
It's pretty much, it's right, the enemy's inside the wire, and no matter how good a ninja you are, you're done.
Right, with stage 4.
The reason why I say that, personal experience with friends.
I understand, I remember you telling me that. With colon cancer, I think the rates are getting better. Again, needs to be done at specialized centers. Currently, it's still not standard of care in the United States, but people are working with trying to prove that it actually helps patients, trying to get some more data out there so that our national cancer guidelines will actually approve colon cancer, carcinomatosis, the HIPEC procedure for that that group of patients.
Just the idea that I'd have a cancer of the appendix and a vestigial organ is going to kill me kind of ticks me off. Even now, you still see a few doctors say, no, there's a reason why we have this. It's a reservoir for bacteria for the gut in the events of extreme sickness, and it's probably what helped the human race survive the plague in Europe. I mean, I've read that stuff. But still, the idea of a vestigial organ is like being killed by a hangnail, you know?
Yes, unfortunately, it can be a bad problem, but it needs to be recognized and appropriately treated. I failed to mention that ovarian cancer is also being studied significantly in the United States with multiple randomized trials trying to prove if the HIPEC procedure is beneficial for even stage 4 ovarian cancer, which is a significant population.
All right. We don't go down and spray the internal organs like this. I mean, when you think about this, we're talking about the area below the lungs. The diaphragm pushes the lungs up and down, allows us to breathe. So there is a membrane across I don't know. I always think about it as just below the sternum myself,
right,
the solar plexus. And then so the chemicals involved basically from there in a horizontal line that moves back and forth all the way down to the pubic mound, all the way down to the
pelvis.
Lowest point, right?
Yes, all the way down to the pelvis.
All right. Now, a lot of people that I know have suffered these types of cancer, including colon cancer, late stage, hear the word metastasize.
Correct.
And this was the question I had for you. Is there a possibility this treatment may be able to apply to metastatic abdominal cancer to be able to use this as a treatment to stop metastatic stage 4 cancer? Can it have an impact in that area?
It is for stage 4 metastatic cancer, but you have to understand that it is metastatic cancer in the sense that it is metastasized or moved from the primary organ to the peritoneal cavity, but not necessarily. If this cancer is in the colon and in the peritoneal cavity, but say has gone to the lung or the brain or any other places, it is still stage 4,
right,
but it's a different kind of stage 4 where you, the benefit is it, the patients would not be benefited from the HIPEC procedure. It has to be confined stage 4 to the abdominal cavity only.
Right. And then once again, because I get carried away with this, and I think you've already noticed this, this has to be looked at as a two-stage process. One, the oncological surgeon goes in and removes what is visible to the eye and then, of course, areas surrounding it based on tests that are really literally performed in the amphitheater while you're doing this,
right,
surgical theater. And then you use this to back you up and to try to go in and ground bomb the rest of it. I have a tendency to use military terms in this because I think of cancer as my enemy. I would imagine you have a similar. You're more academic. You're not quite as emotional as I am. But I still look at it as the enemy.
It is.
And in this particular case, two-stage. And this has got to be exciting for Dr. Suvan Shankar. You and I talked once before that people look at you and they say, save my life. And I've always had a great deal of compassion for a person who's in that position, who's as solid as you are, going, I'm going to do my best. But people ask you to save their lives literally every day, don't they?
They do, and there are expectations to be met, but it is our goal as surgeons and cancer physicians that we have to tell our patients to have realistic expectations.
Yeah.
And what they can and can't achieve. The worst thing you can do is give false expectations and not deliver. We are basically trying to help people with stage 4 cancer. We're trying to give them the best quality of life that they can, and not to mention extend their life. And I am glad that we are able to do this here in Southern Illinois. I trained in my fellowship was in Mercy Medical Center, which we actually took a team to Mercy Medical Center from Memorial Hospital to, so that they could see the whole team at work. I spent 2 years over there with the high volume HIPEC center, so we did cases every week for 2 years in a row, and they still continue to do that.
So you have a lot of experience in this.
From my training, yes, I do. And we've already done since last September 6 HIPECs here. It's out there.
All right. So there's two things. When I talked about metastatic, I think maybe I wasn't as clear as I should have been what I had in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Spreading to the bone is the one that always kind of scares me a bit more. Would this apply in this area?
No, it
this is from organ to organ transfer?
So, yeah, if it went to the bone, brain, lung, then
right. This
procedure is out. It has to be confined to the abdominal cavity, basically.
Can you think that there's any hope of being able to reapply the technology that's developed here to be able to use chemotherapy drugs across the blood-brain barrier so we can use this in effective brain cancer treatment?
No.
Too bad, huh?
Yeah.
Because that's the holy grail.
Yes.
How to cross the blood-brain barrier with effective chemotherapy drugs for brain. And when I read this, I wondered, where does this, what are the limitations of it now that we've started thinking about this in a fundamentally different way? It's put something in the vein. Put something in the vein, radiation. This seems to be almost like a fundamentally different, almost a mechanical approach to cancer treatment.
Right. It's mechanical. It's topical. The basis behind it being that the peritoneum is a very thin lining that covers the abdominal cavity on the inside, and it does not have a very good blood supply to it. So if you're giving a patient IV chemotherapy intravenous, if it's not going to a place where there's good blood supply, how is the chemotherapy
not effective
there
right.
at all? So hence, like you said, it's a mechanical, you're stripping the peritoneum, you're debulking the tumor, you're basically making sure that there's no visible disease, and you're coming back and bombing it, like you said, with heat and chemotherapy.
When you are done applying this this new treatment, does a person become a stage one cancer patient?
Their stage does not change.
Yeah, okay.
The stage stays the same.
I was wondering if
we continue to follow them with, and sometimes they continue to have IV chemotherapy after, depending on the type of the tumor. But we continue to follow the patient every 3 to 6 months with CAT scans, with blood work, with tumor markers, because these are patients that your goal is to extend their life, to try and get them to that 5-year mark, but they're at a high risk of recurrence, and they're at a high risk of it recurring not necessarily only in the abdominal cavity, but elsewhere in the body. So you have to wait for it. There's a high likelihood it's coming back.
Right.
But if you don't do anything for these patients, then you did not extend their survival.
And you know you've carpet bombed the hell out of it in the process.
You have to be aggressive.
Because there's another thing, and you know this probably better than most, the brain is a really effective tool. Optimism, faith,
yes,
mood.
Yes, very important.
Are components that we have a tendency to gloss over. We want a magic bullet, a button, a software program, the id, what's what it wants when it wants it. I want to be cured. Push the button.
Right.
And in this, you know, we're seeing a little bit different thought that, you know, the quality of the care, the outcome even for this treatment may be altered by your emotional predisposition towards the way you're being treated. I called it emotional disposition. Some people would say spiritual. And I think this, the healing hands, the idea that all this is one package, which
yes,
is something that I know you pride yourself on.
I completely agree with that. I think if you have a patient that is beat emotionally and is not physically or emotionally ready to accept the treatment, they will, as studies have proven, they will do not as good as somebody that is emotionally positive and are going to say, hey, let's go fight this thing.
Right.
Plain and simple. So regardless of what we can do as physicians for patients, if the patient's attitude is not going to be upbeat as much as it can be in a situation, it's going to go against them, plain and simple.
Mind and body work together.
They do.
Dr. Suvan Shankar, surgical oncologist, SIH. Really good to see you again, Doc.
It's good to hear. Best of luck. You too. Thank you very much.
Best of luck on this, too, man.